So today, on a really cool October morning, we are standing here on Quindaro Boulevard, which is the core of Northeast Kansas City, Kansas community, and the neighborhood surrounding it. For those of you who are familiar with local history, the name Quindaro probably brings to mind the Civil War era town founded by Native Americans, blacks who had escaped from the slave towns just across the Missouri River, and white abolitionists. It was a stop on the Underground Railroad. But decades later, another Quindaro community, a black community, evolved out of the segregation in Northeast KCK. I'm Michelle Tyrene Johnson, and this is a special broadcast of KCUR's Central Standard. It's the culmination of a reporting project that takes us to several different parts of our listening area for months at a time. It's called Here to Listen. We've been to Belton, Missouri, Tonganoxie, and Atchison, Kansas, among other places, and today we're taking you through a journey of time and place, a journey to learn about what Quindaro Boulevard once was, what it is today, and where it may be going. It's not going to be a geographical journey, but an audio journey over time that we hope will bring to life some of the people and places along Quindaro who don't normally make the news. So we're standing just a few blocks from the house that we moved in when I was 9 years old, a place that I moved back into several years ago as family and personal dynamics changed. I'm fourth generation KCK. I tell people that all the time. My mother and grandmother went to Sumner High, not far away, when it was just a neighborhood high school before it became that nationally recognized powerhouse magnet school that it is now. I went to Catholic schools on the Missouri side, taking the city bus round trip, and then I went off to college at 17, so I can't say that I grew up having the deep connection with the neighborhood that many did. But with my grandmother living over here years after I grew up and moved away, I've consistently seen the ups and downs of this area for several decades. I was a huge fan of Mrs. Newman's Burgers back in the day, probably still the best hamburger I've ever had. I've had friends from KU, where I went undergrad, who lived in the neighborhoods on and off of Quindaro. I've gotten my hair done up and down the street, including at Gladys Briscoe's Beauty Salon that had her name on the building up until fairly recently. I've put gas in my car in Quindaro, still get my toilet paper from the Family Dollar just up the road, and just about every week of my life for the past 13 years, I drive up Quindaro Boulevard to get to the highway, or to occasionally go to the Quindaro Ruins for writing inspiration, and before she passed away, to visit my grandmother in the nursing home that was on Leavenworth Road. So, for most people, while this is an area of Kansas City that they don't know much about, or a place that has a lot of negative associations, for me and for a whole lot of other people, it's just home. Right now, I'm in the middle of Boston Daniels Park, a patch of green space at 8th and Quindaro, and I'll be honest, I never knew that's what it was called. All I knew was is that it was the park across from Mrs. R's. Speaking of Mrs. R's soul food restaurant, her food is fire. If you've never had neck bones, this is a place you might want to come visit.
People that I don't even know, I get cards and stuff thanking me for being a pillar of the community and for helping people out. So I think it benefits because I try to keep my prices down that's affordable. So I think it's very beneficial to people, you know, they can't really afford to go out and get a good meal. They can always get one here.
What would be the one thing you would like to see for the future of Quindaro?
That more businesses would come and there would be, it just need a facelift. You know, they're coming, look like they're coming, but they're taking their time coming. They're made it up to, about 20-something in Brown, but we need it all the way down Quindaro. Not just building the little houses, we need some businesses to come here.
And just to my west is the Our Lady and St. Rose Catholic Church, where we'll be going inside a little later in the show to hear about the unique community that has developed there. But first, joining me here is KCUR's community engagement reporter, Laura Ziegler. Hey, Laura.
Hi, Michelle.
So you've been looking into the history of Quindaro Boulevard and visiting with a lot of folks who grew up here. Some have left, but others are coming back to revitalize Quindaro. Could you tell me a little bit more about that?
I'd love to, Michelle. It's been amazing for me. to get to know so many of these wonderful people from this community. It's a community that you're much more familiar with than I am. Coincidentally, we're standing here at Boston Daniel Park, and this story that I'm going to tell first begins right across the street in that leafy, grassy lot there. It was, it's a vacant lot now, but at one point, it's where Edith Turnipseed and Vita Munday lived when they were growing up in the 1950s and 1960s. I recently met Edith and Vita there on that site where their childhood home once stood. 75-year-old Edith was wearing a bright yellow blouse and yellow sunglasses to match, and Vita, her 71-year-old baby sister, was in a bright yellow t-shirt and a ponytail. We're talking about their growing up in this community, and the sisters are looking across the street, across Quindaro Boulevard there, to what are now mostly vacant buildings and lots.
What was next door to Miss Hewlett? The alleyway. And then Mr. Moore's store. Mr. Moore's was a liquor store. And next to that was a neighborhood grocery store. I don't remember the name. The owners were Caucasian.
The two of them kind of quibble about which stores were where, but they both remember that as black girls, they didn't leave the black community, which meant they really didn't go west of 7th or 8th Street on Quindaro. But they also agree that things were changing at that time. Black people were starting to own businesses, like the one that moved into the grocery store next to Mr. Moore's liquor store.
And it ultimately became a seafood grotto, which was owned and operated by an African-American man. That was a big thing.
Yeah.
That an African-American man got this prime spot right there on the corner.
Then Edith turns around and looks at the house behind us that was next door to theirs while they were growing up.
You know what? Now, this family was white. Yeah, and they had a She had a granddaughter, I guess, Jerry Lou, and we played all the time. I don't think I ever went in that house. I don't think Jerry Lou ever went inside our house. But we were in each other's backyards, and we played in the park together.
It never even occurred to Edith and Vita that any of this was really out of the ordinary. A few blocks east, down Quindaro, is the corner of 5th Street and Quindaro.
This at one time was Kirk's drugstore. He was a pharmacist. And right next to this was the Hub bookstore, 2103 North 5th. This is a hub.
The hub of the Northeast area.
Yes,
it was the hub of the Northeast area. That's James and Dorothy McField, and they co-owned the shop from 1968 to 1975. Dorothy McField says, she knew there were shops that she couldn't go into, and there were theaters where she couldn't sit. But for Dorothy and for James, they didn't really mind. They said everything they needed was right here in their community.
I've never felt segregated. I never have. We had everything we needed.
There were restaurants and theaters. There were grocery stores and salons.
Growing up, we had Northeast Junior High School up here. I went to Keeling Elementary School. That was right around 4th Street over here.
But there were schools that you couldn't go to.
Didn't want to.
About that school integration and the fair housing and public accommodations laws, laws designed to fix historic injustices, the McFields lament some of the negative ways they affected the black community along Quindaro Boulevard.
It was a fantastic area. It had all kinds of businesses that we could participate in without worrying about whether people wanted us or not. Glad that they were there and sorry that the thing that people thought was so positive, called integration, really created a desolation of businesses in this area.
So now I'm on the corner of 9th and Quindaro. On the west side of the street is firehouse number 5. It was one of two black fire stations in the Quindaro neighborhood. And it is also the corner where Robert Hughes Sr. had the Mid-Central Mortgage Company, which was very important in helping this black community get home loans and financing. He says his dad started the mortgage lending company because there were federal and real estate industry policies that made it almost impossible for black people to get loans and insurance.
And with that, they were able to make Fannie Mae approve loans so those loans could be portfolioed and sold off into the secondary market and bring funds back into the mortgage company who could make some more loans.
But Mid-Central didn't have the financial capacity of white-owned banks. Discriminatory policies deprived black communities of credit and insurance. Blockbusting caused white flight by spreading fear about neighborhood integration. Businesses, white and black, left and drained communities of their tax bases and jobs. Crime increased, exacerbated by the crack cocaine epidemic that afflicted black neighborhoods disproportionately in the 1980s. Hughes says all this set Quindaro Boulevard at a disadvantage for decades.
I don't have an asset base. I don't have the same opportunity from the start. Now I'm trying to catch up. I'll never catch up. I mean, that's running a race and you start, you know, 100 yards ahead of me. Every time I get to where you were, you're not there anymore.
But Hughes believes there's an interest in reviving the area.
Come on, you're in.
B's Barbershop at 18th and Quindaro hums with activity on Saturday mornings, and its owner, Bernard Crawford, recalls similar vitality while he was growing up on the boulevard in the 70s.
I mean, I remember walking to the bakery down on Quindaro, and many different stores were down here, and even grocery stores. So, you know, this is home.
He doesn't live here anymore, but he says he came back and intentionally opened his business here for spiritual reasons. He's also a pastor, and he wants to be what he calls a light on Quindaro to offset an inaccurate perception.
The stigma from the violence, the negativity that we have seen portrayed on our news channels, sure you have your elements that come in and that, you know, pollute Quindaro, but overall, it's a lot of good people here.
About a block or so west is Wilson's Pizza.
Thank you. How your mama doing?
Gary Wilson's family grew up on Quindaro also. His dad had a pizza shop and was also a firefighter in one of the two segregated firehouses in the community. Wilson took over the shop in 1980.
You make that?
Oh, yeah. All made at home.
As one of the thriving businesses here, he sees himself as an anchor for the neighborhood.
One thing about Wilson's Pizza and me, myself, and my family, period, people know that they could come to me. They know I'm going to be here to help them if I can help them. I'm not just a pizza place. I'm a counselor. I'm a preacher. It's more than just doing business in an environment like this.
About this environment and its history, people see it through the lens of their own experiences, and obviously they're not all the same. But there is agreement among old-timers and those coming back that restoring vitality to Quindaro Boulevard will require outside resources, but also a belief that a thriving community there is possible again.
That was KCUR's Laura Ziegler, and here we are, back in Boston Daniels Park. Like I said, a lot of people don't even know the name of this little park or the story of the person behind the name. He was the first black police chief of Kansas City, Kansas, and he was known for his kindness and service to his community. I'm here with two people who are dedicated to preserving his memory, his grandniece and grandnephew, Karen Daniels and Anthony Hodges.
We're on 8th and Quindaro. We're right here with Boston Daniels Park. This park is it's in the heart of the city, the northeast side. And, you know, we want to make sure it's nice for the people to come out, be able to play and have a nice time here. But as you can see, like, it needs to be revitalized and it needs to be up-to-date. A lot of times you have like a lot of people on drugs and drunks up here playing, and we want to make sure that it's really representing the community.
I was going to ask that question. How do you see encouraging more people to use this park?
More seating, picnic tables, things that will attract people. There's a restaurant right across the street. There's several restaurants in the area. It would be a great place to have your lunch, at noonday lunch for people that work. City Hall is right down the street. Kansas City, Kansas Police Department is putting together a police museum right now.
Oh.
That's scheduled to be open in 2020. They're going to have an exhibit featuring this park in Boston Daniels, and that will draw people to this park.
Because Boston Daniels, he was the first black police chief of KCK, right?
He's the first black police chief in the nation of a major city.
And what do you think that represents as a legacy?
It represents a lot because for him to be in that position at that time in a major city was very powerful. And one thing that we have to understand is, like, as we look at it now, you know, the community and police is kind of at a disconnect, in this, not just in Kansas City, but around the country. So at that time, he was policing where the people in the community knew who he was. He was hands-on, and he built relationships, and we got to get back to that, where it's not a distrust in the community.
You beat me to the very question I was going to ask you about. He had a reputation for being someone who he was as much about, as you said, relationship building as using a gun.
The way he policed, they used his tactics and his strategy all across the country. Not only was he over in Kansas City, Kansas, but he also policed down in Wayne Minor and T.B. Watkins over in Kansas City, Missouri. So this is very significant of what he brought to the table as a police chief.
So what do you think helps create a push for the community? What is it about naming this park after Boston Daniels that nudges the community?
He was so well loved and respected. Mm-hmm. People still remember him to this day, 50 years later. They want to see it improved, the neighbors, the community, the surrounding businesses, and everyone would be able to utilize it because it is within walking distance of so many different places.
I asked the question because as someone who lives nearby and who grew up in the area, I know that Quindaro Boulevard itself has gone through a lot of changes, you know, up and down, up and down, up and down, going back even before you were born. So what do you think this park represents in terms of that trajectory of what Quindaro Boulevard means?
Improvement. I can see not only the park being improved, but all of Quindaro revitalized and coming back to life. It used to be a thriving community. This street, Quindaro Boulevard, you could just say the name and everybody knew. This is our 18th and Vine. Exactly. We need to build it up. We need to have entertainment for people to come and socialize and gather, because gathering is the main thing about a park, to bring people together so they can communicate with each other. They can fellowship with each other.
Exactly. I think it's interesting that this park does not have a barbecue grill, because, you know, how can you properly have a park in a black neighborhood and not have a place for folks to have cookouts?
Right. There's no grill. There's only one chair. There's no picnic tables. We want to change all that. I'd like to bring in more tables, an updated playground, more picnic benches, improve the steps so people can access the park better for elderly, the youth, for everybody. It's not a lot of space, but it's a lot of history.
That was Karen Daniels and Anthony Hodges, grandniece and grandnephew of former KCK Police Chief Boston Daniels. In a few minutes, we'll visit one of the few places on modern-day Quindaro Boulevard where you'll see white people besides Laura Z at least once a week. That's next on this special edition of KCUR Central Standard. I'm Michelle Tyrene Johnson. Don't go away. This is a special edition of KCUR Central Standard. I'm Michelle Tyrene Johnson, and we're spending today's show on Quindaro Boulevard in KCK. It's the latest edition of our Here to Listen series, where we spend a few months learning about history, present-day life, hopes and dreams of a particular community in KCUR's listening area. Now we visit a beautiful Catholic church I have passed thousands of times because it's right near where I live. But until this story, I had never been inside. The quietest time on Quindaro Boulevard is the early hours of Sunday morning when there's not much traffic. But then you step into Our Lady and St. Rose Catholic Church on 8th and Quindaro. Next year, the church celebrates 100 years on this spot. A fire nearly destroyed the building in 1950, but the church and the old school next to it stay standing. Both were originally named after St. Rose of Lima. Although the school has been closed for many years, weekly Mass at the church still takes place every Sunday morning. Barbara Bailey oversees the operation of the church as a pastoral associate. She knows the church's history better than just about anybody.
This church is a combination of two, Our Lady of Perpetual Help and St. Rosa Lima. So in 1967, when it was combined, I came with the group.
Bailey came from the nearby Our Lady of Perpetual Help. She recognizes the reputation that the surrounding neighborhoods have developed in recent years regarding crime and poverty, but she knows there's more to the area's history and to the churches.
This was a white church. When my mother and my grandparents came from Alma, Kansas, she was 8. It was all white church. And at that time, they had to sit in the last row if they wanted to attend church.
Bailey has witnessed the church's shift from segregated to multicultural to diverse but predominantly black as the neighborhood around the church has changed.
And the white people that were still attending this church have died. You know, that they didn't leave, they died. They were buried from the church.
There are only about 100 families that still attend, but this majestic brick Quindaro mainstay remains unmoved. That's why even though he lives in Shawnee, Kansas, Charles Jean-Baptiste drives past a lot of churches closer to home to attend St. Rose and Our Lady. He's been coming for 15 years.
It's a historical pillar in the community.
Jean-Baptiste says that while there are many churches closer to him, this church provides more racial diversity.
I didn't feel fully accepted compared to here.
Therese Bangart, a nun with the church, lived next door to it for 20 years, from 1996 to 2016. Although predominantly a black congregation, Bangart, who is white, says diversity and tradition are among the church's strengths.
It's been what our mission statement says. It's been a faith-filled, diverse family community.
In addition to being very protective of the church, Bangart is very protective of the neighborhood when people try to disparage it.
I lived in this community, and I know the goodness that's here.
Our Lady and St. Rose Catholic Church is a faith.
Father Nick Blaha became the church's priest 2 months ago. He's white, and he grew up in Johnson County. Like others, he was aware of the neighborhood's challenges, but he knows one cannot judge an entire community by some of the bad that happens. Although a newcomer, he doesn't take the church's legacy lightly.
And it confers a great sense of responsibility, too, that I have to be a caretaker and a steward and to hopefully leave it better than I found it.
Barbara Bailey also doesn't like how the location of the church gets a bad rap. She says the church is a community cornerstone.
It's a blessing that we're still here, you know, from the things that happen. And things happen at this church. We have break-ins. We have people that steal stuff, you know, but the church has stayed and we're not going anywhere.
As Our Lady in St. Rose celebrates its 100th birthday in 2020, the church aims to continue being a quiet but majestic asset in an ever-changing neighborhood. Just a few blocks from here, down at 5th and Quindaro, two couples created another community gathering spot in the 60s, all around black literature and culture. My colleague Laura Ziegler takes us to that spot.
Dorothy and James McField founded the Hub with their good friends Chester and Lily Owens in 1968. Lily passed away in 2017, but Chester and the McFields are just as spry and passionate about ideas and culture as you imagine they were when they opened the bookstore at 5th and Quindaro Boulevard. The Hub was one of dozens of black-owned bookstores popping up in major cities around the country during the Civil Rights era and the blossoming Black Pride movement. There was a demand for black culture, but not many places to find it.
Well, this is the 60s, and America was going through an awakening. We wanted to find a way to put information out there so people could get information if they needed it, if they wanted it.
The McFields and the Owens felt like they could fill that void. They offered poetry, novels, and nonfiction, like the work of Lerone Bennett Jr., who wrote a comprehensive black history called Before the Mayflower. Here is an excerpt.
It was a bitter moment for the South. Robert E. Lee had failed to retake an important position within the sight of the steeples of the Confederate Capitol. Lieutenant Prescott stood cheering on the parapet of Fort Harrison, and he believed he could see the beginning of the end. that black soldiers should play an important role in this action seems somehow poetic. For in the beginning, in the middle, and in the ending of the Civil War, the black American, as soldier and civilian, was central.
Today, the building at 2103 North Fifth Street is worn and vacant. Bars and no loitering signs are on the windows. But in its heyday, the location was a bustling corner of activity. There was Alice Bailey Funeral Home, Cundiff Drugstore, and Burdett's Filling Station, says Dorothy McField.
Well, it was a business street. It was all kinds of businesses. Yes. It had movie theater, had barbershops, tailor shops.
Had pharmacies, had all that sort of thing. Yeah.
The neighborhood began to struggle in the decade after the bookstore closed. Racist federal laws and discriminatory lending practices contributed to the same economic challenges that were hurting many urban communities across the country. Fair housing and public accommodations accelerated white flight. I recently met up with Dorothy and James McField and Chester Owens in the McFields Art Studio that's adjacent to their home in Parkwood, a neighborhood just off Quindaro Boulevard. Today, the McFields and Chester Owens are in their mid-80s. They'd brought in dozens of books and journals that were available at the Hub and put them on tables and shelves. Art is hanging on every wall and standing along the floors. Nothing's for sale, but the McFields say they invite people over just to browse and have conversations and discussions about ideas. They say the idea for the Hub grew out of such a conversation among community members who were looking for ways to expand the community economically. Some suggested they put in a grocery store. But the McFields and Owens felt it was important to provide a venue for literature by and about black people.
Chess and I said, let's start a bookstore. And they all laughed at us. Yeah. So, and where are you going to have it? I said, well, Fifth and Quindaro. Then they laughed louder. Yeah.
Well, they did it anyway, and the Hub became a cultural clearinghouse, a comfy place for people to hang out, to visit, and to read. They sold tea and gourmet foods, dashikis and other African fashion, along with handmade jewelry. But Owen says it was never about profit.
Money had nothing to do with it. To me, the young people who would sit down in the floor in the Hub and read the books.
They also sold music and recordings of well-known black spokespeople like Malcolm X.
The political philosophy of black nationalism only means that the black man should control the politics and the politicians in his own community. The time when white people can come in our community and get us to vote for them so that they can be our political leaders and tell us what to do and what not to do is long gone.
What was going on at the Hub spread by word of mouth. They began to attract a diverse customer base. They sold around the country, but primarily around the Midwest, to teachers from Johnson County, Benedictine College, and William Jewell.
We sold books to a lot of the white community who was trying to understand. We were the only bookstore, only source for black literature in this area.
A number of well-known political and cultural figures came through the Hub. Former California Congressman Ron Dellums, writers Chinua Achebe and Alex Haley, whose brother George Haley was also a Kansas senator and prominent diplomat and policy expert. The Hub's inventory included the works of many similarly distinguished authors and poets like Don L. Lee, who later changed his name to Haki Madhubuti. He reads from some of his work here.
Brothers boppin', boppin', bebopping, cities locked up and chained, insane by cracking other acts of desperation, computerizing, Pentagon cellar-producing, boppin' brothers boast of being better, best, and beautiful. If the boppin' brothers are beautiful, where are the sisters who see brother man with a drugless head, unbossed, are beaten by the bodacious West?
The Hub's association with authors like Madhubuti and activists like Malcolm X put it in the crosshairs of the FBI. During the 60s, J. Edgar Hoover had extended his anti-communist counterintelligence initiative known as COINTELPRO to focus on leaders within the Black Power movement, from Eldridge Cleaver to Martin Luther King. Hoover began to target black bookstores around the country, including the Hub, says Dorothy McField.
And he had decided that black bookstores were the basis for all the...
subversive?
Yeah, all the bad stuff going on in the country.
Today, the founders laugh at the idea that the bookstore was an agent of any black nationalism, and they say they became friends, even drank tea with the FBI agent who regularly stopped in. But some have questioned whether this kind of surveillance contributed to the demise of black bookstores around the country. Like the Hub, they began to close in the mid-70s. It wasn't easy to run a black business at that time, and some have argued that the presence of law enforcement may have deterred customers. It's been almost 45 years since the Hub closed. Holding up some of the worn volumes, Dorothy McField says she's gratified that she still runs into people who remind her that the store had a lasting legacy.
The numbers of young people who come up to us every now and then and call us Mr. Ms. Hub, because they remember being there, growing up, being exposed to literature and people, artists that they had never heard of.
The McFields and Chester Owens are enjoying retirement these days. Owens is writing his own account of Black history in Kansas City. And the McFields have opened up their studio for people to come in, to browse the artwork, and again, to have conversation. People still do, says Dorothy McFields. A lot like they did at the Hub.
In case you're just tuning in, I'm Michelle Tyrene Johnson. This is a special edition of KCUR's Central Standard, all about the communities surrounding Quindaro Boulevard in Kansas City, Kansas. As we visit places along the street from the past and present, we wanted to sit down with two people who have been deeply invested in shaping the future of these neighborhoods. Broderick Crawford is president of the NBC Community Development Corporation. Welcome to KCUR.
Thank you for having me.
Broderick, tell us a little bit more about where and when you grew up and what economic changes you've witnessed over the years. Being from that area myself, I know that is a complicated question.
Absolutely. So I was born and raised in Wyandotte County. And so watching things evolve, I can remember when I was a youth, all along Quindaro, there were shops, there were grocery stores, there were places for individuals to eat. There were places that individuals and residents from Wyandotte County not only were safe, but enjoyed interacting and fellowshipping with one another. As I continue to grow and age and mature, those things begin to slowly go away. Homes begin to be torn down. I can remember Velvet Freeze on Quindaro there at 11th Street. And so the neighborhood then began to suffer. Because as you take away all of those things that keep a neighborhood vibrant, what's left?
So we're also joined in this conversation by Rachel Jefferson. She's the executive director of the Historic Northeast Midtown Association. Welcome to KCUR.
Thank you for having me.
So, you know, Rachel, one of the things that's interesting to me, because I've lived in the area since, I mean, we moved over there when I was a kid. It was news to me that that was even considered the Northeast part of KCK. Is that sort of more of a recent way of looking at that area?
My familiarity with Kansas City, Kansas was because of my grandmother, who lived on that side of the state line, and my mom bringing me over to see her. And so when I came back from school, my parents had moved back over to the Kansas City, Kansas side. And that's when I became acquainted with Kansas City, Kansas, Wyandotte County, and the Northeast area. When I came back, that's how the people that lived there referred to it. Was Northeast Kansas City, Kansas. And so that name for me holds a lot of meaning and has only expanded over time as I've worked in that community to understand that the Northeast, when people refer to that, they refer to a whole slew of things. They refer to the actual geographic area. They refer to a set of demographics. They're referring to a perception that they have of that area. And then for those who are in the know, they're also referring to the historical significance of that area there, particularly with the Underground Railroad site and the history of indigenous communities that lived there, oftentimes in conjunction with the African-American communities that lived there.
What do you both see as the community's primary needs from a development standpoint?
Well, for me, I think the primary need for the community is to be involved in development. And so for us, the critical thing is how do we build that knowledge within community so that we are not continuing to rely upon others for that return of vibrancy that we all would like to see, the economic revitalization, but we can create it ourselves and have a really full, comprehensive understanding of how to do that and how to leverage the tools that are out there or create new tools that will, in the end, benefit our community members and protect against things like the negative consequences of gentrification, like displacement and dislocation.
But here's the thing. How do you get people? Because I deal with this on my block. So my neighbors who have just, for not always bad reason, have not felt like they could trust process, that they can trust government, that they can trust all these mechanisms that you're talking about to get more.
So the older generation oftentimes have had to really fight to get what they've been able to accomplish or what they have received. What we're now trying to promote, and we have several programs that are looking at civic engagement, policy change. We don't just want a handout. We want to be a part of the process.
And I think to answer your question, the way you do that is you start small and you meet people where they're at. And to your point, I'm not sure that people should put all their trust in the institutions. I think that's the point exactly, is we have to inspect what we expect. But you can't inspect it if you don't understand how it works. And so once you understand how the processes work, if you can get people engaged, then I think that's where you really start to see the ability to grow people's civic bones, so to speak.
So, you know, Broderick, you have seen how redlining has changed neighborhood. What does that look like for the Quindaro area in your mind?
So redlining has devastated not only the Quindaro area, but the Northeast sector totally. When you look at the maps that were created, that where you looked at how the areas were graded, there was not an A-grade neighborhood in Kansas City, Kansas at all, period.
Now, what do you mean by A-grade?
So A-grade, if when you look at how the redlining was implemented, A-grades were those very nice areas. Those folks that are in those areas where it was very easy for them to get a home loan. These grades were put down by the Homeowners Loan Corporation. Well, in Wyandotte County, the A-grade was non-existent.
So there were no areas then that were identified as being prime areas for this type of home.
For lending.
For this lending.
And then you had D areas, which were not areas that they would recommend lending to take place. Well, guess what? Quindaro was totally a D-grade area.
And mostly totally. Because of the color of people's skin that lived in that area.
But like I tell most people, that's a very common scenario for most urban cities that at one point white people could live there and we couldn't.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then at all it takes is just one black family.
To move in.
To move in. And then
you have white exodus.
And then an exodus. And then that makes a change in how the property goes. I mean, is that a fair?
Well, yeah. And then black people move in and then developers and interested parties don't see it as a desirable area to continue to invest. You just generally see a decline, not necessarily because of the economic strength of the people that live there, although that is a factor, but also just because of straight-up racism.
Right.
Do you see Quindaro Boulevard as ever being a place where apartments and new homes will be built?
Absolutely. I mean, they have built some new homes along Quindaro.
I have seen a few.
Yeah, especially around that 22nd Street area. They've built a couple new homes. And I think that the city has realized that they made a misstep by letting those homes deteriorate to the point where they had to be raised. That if they had stepped in earlier, they could have saved a lot of those homes. And now wouldn't be faced with such a daunting task in creating infill housing. So I think there is a lot of opportunity for the return of vibrancy, economic vibrancy to the Quindaro area. And that's the whole theme of our Northeast Grocers Project is let's do it again.
Right.
But let's do it in a different way, because we know if we keep having these top-down processes where community is tokenized and not actually brought into the process as decision makers, it will not be sustainable. We see that time and time again.
So you just mentioned in passing one of my favorite topics about my area, and that is grocery stores. You know, we've got these two sort of grocery store projects that seem to be different
stages.
So we've got the co-op. Then we're talking about this grocery store that's on Quindaro. That's what, talking about 18th and Quindaro?
Yes, 17th and Quindaro.
17th and Quindaro.
The building is owned by Pride, the local chapter of the Black Firefighters Association. And so it actually was a grocery store back in the day that was operated by the United Nation of Islam. And so now we've worked to clean it out. And so now it's a nice empty space, and we've been doing some community meetings, and we've had some design build projects that we put in there, working with the National Organization for Minority Architects and Youth Build KCK, continuing to educate people about the benefits of a cooperative, because the store on on 17th and Quindaro would also actually be a cooperative. The Northeast Grocers is at the startup phase. It can take a long time for a cooperative to get started, usually a 3-year minimum. And so our first steps were to find a site, secure it. We're working through a lease agreement right now with Pride. And then we're going to be looking to hire a project manager to start building our membership, continuing the cooperative education, and really start trying to put some of those things in place where we could become a cooperative retail outlet.
From my standpoint, because I obviously work here at KCUR,
right.
So I can go several different ways home and get to a grocery store, because that's one of the things that I think a lot of listeners may not get from this conversation, that the average person probably have half a dozen grocery stores between wherever they work and wherever they live that aren't out of the way.
So check this out. I currently live at 8th and State. The closest grocery store for me by bus or car is Constantino's in downtown Kansas City, Missouri.
Yep,
so think
here.
About that.
Same here.
Because Kansas City, Missouri only has so much room to build lofts downtown, they are going to have to move west. There are several buildings there that I know developers are taking a look at. Rachel and Henma, along with other neighborhood associations, have broke ground on the Boulevard Lofts, which is going to be a multi...
I think it's about 50 units there along Washington Boulevard.
This is how neighborhoods change, though. I mean, I can think about, like, even the crossroads in Kansas City, Missouri. I mean, we see how neighborhoods can become reinvented.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, you know, you're starting to see those effects of displacement in the crossroads. So again, our goal is, how do we protect the people who have stayed here despite the disinvestment and lack of investment for years? Because we have this rich history. We have this wealth of people with this knowledge and desire to make something happen. It will happen.
It will happen.
Broderick Crawford is president of NBC Community Development Corporation. Rachel Jefferson is executive director of the historic Northeast Midtown Association. Thanks so much to the both of you for joining us on KCUR Central Standard.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, it's been great. Now, in just a minute, we'll get back to Quindaro Boulevard to spend some time with some young people who really hold the future of this place in their hands. This is KCUR Central Standard. I'm Michelle Tyrene Johnson. I'm Michelle Tyrene Johnson. This is KCUR Central Standard. Today's show comes from a couple of months of reporting along Quindaro Boulevard in Kansas City, Kansas. This is the latest community we've been visiting as part of our project called Here to Listen. You may have caught our other journeys through Liberty or Oreck in Missouri or Atchison in Kansas. This show has brought me very close to home, Quindaro Boulevard in KCK. We've been talking about the history and present-day life in this community, but we also are going to be talking about the future. KCUR's Andrea Tudhope introduces us to some nearby residents who are thinking about just that.
Miss Beverly Stewart has lived in this house on North 20th Street, right off of Quindaro Boulevard, for the past 30 years.
Well, my family's always lived somewhere around here in the Quindaro area.
While she waits for her 13-year-old grandson, Jamon Glass, to get home from school, she trims flowers at her desk.
Oh, my daughter brought me some flowers. She brings me flowers about once every month.
Miss Beverly's house is a gathering spot for her big family. Jamon comes here every day. He loves the area because of his grandma, but other than that, he shows me there's not much for young people like him to do around here.
Do you ever walk over to Quindaro like this?
To the gas station.
What do you do at the gas station?
Just buy like a lot of snacks and come back to my grandma's house or play.
We turn onto Quindaro at ENS Body Shop. Yeah. That and Pete's Barbershop are the only two businesses left on the block. Years back, it was crawling with activity. There was the old Quindaro Bank, which still has its original structure and signage, Reader's Pharmacy, a bakery and post office, oh, and a grocery store. In fact, in the 70s, there were at least 6 grocery stores on the boulevard. Now, there's not a single one.
When you look at Quindaro now, can you imagine what it used to be like?
Yeah. Like, a really busy place.
Seems like back in the day, it was also a lot of people walking around, but it doesn't really seem like that would be very doable now.
So much shooting around here.
He points to an empty storefront next to Pete's that used to be a beauty salon.
Like this place here, it got like a lot of gunshots in it.
Really?
Yep.
This topic comes up a lot for teens around here, like Nicholas Brass, who's 14. He used to spend a lot of time on Quindaro.
And it's very important to know where you are from so you can make it successful in life and know what you need to do to get out. There's good people here, and it's not terrible, but bad stuff does go on. And you don't want to live here forever.
Growing up, 14-year-old Lanaya Mead says her mom used to tell her she didn't want her to feel stuck here in KCK.
And so I always thought, like, okay, I need to work my hardest and be the best so that I can make it out.
Kalia London, also 14, feels the same way.
If I'm going to start a new section of my life, this isn't where I want to do it. Because there's more opportunities if I get out of here. And that's a really big goal, too. Just try and get out of here.
Kalia has lived on the boulevard since she was a toddler. She hears gunshots most nights. Her mom is a police officer, which honestly, she tells me, makes her worry more. Right now, she just hopes to make it to 18. A string of retaliatory violence over the past few years has taken the lives of at least 5 teenagers, some not too far from here. Police don't have many answers, but if you spend any time listening to the community, you get the sense that teens are the ones doing the killing.
I'm not scared. Irritated, yes, but not scared.
I ask her if she feels like people, especially outsiders, get distracted by the so-called bad parts of this community. She sighs and looks down.
Yeah.
You feel that way?
I do. It doesn't define our community.
Sometimes she says that hurts more than the violence itself, and I can see that on her face. Once she remembers overhearing teachers who weren't from the same neighborhoods as their students talking about the kids.
They'll never amount to anything if they don't get out. We're going to have to help them. We're going to have to. I'm like, that's not true. My environment does not define me.
But even beyond that, she's proud of where she's from.
I enjoy it a lot. It may not be the safest place, but we're the best community to have because when we need it, we all band together.
For Lanaya Mead, it was when she tapped into that sense of community and that feeling like she was part of it that something clicked.
As I got older and I learned more about it, I'm like, okay, I could 100% make it out, but also I could stay here and help make it better.
So in whatever spare time she has outside of school and the 4 college classes she's already taking as a freshman, Lanaya does her best to change that narrative that you have to leave.
I know the people here, like, it may seem like they don't care, but they do. It's just they have so much other things to do. Like, they have children and they have things like that, and they don't have the time to worry about what's going on up the block. And I think that if I can help make it better, then other people will also join in and help and say, oh, well, it does matter what happens up the block. It does matter what's going on in the streets.
How you doing?
I meet a middle-aged couple outside of one of the many abandoned buildings that pepper the boulevard.
Is this going to be the spot?
Clayton and Mickey Wells want to buy this building near 18th and Quindaro, gut it, and make way for a place called The Hangout, a place just for teens where they can come after school, be safe, and learn leadership and communication skills. At this point, it's still a pipe dream.
As you see, it's got notices up, but I can't find the owner.
The building is in bad shape, and Clayton thinks it may cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to fix it. But he says it's worth it.
I want greatness to come out of here.
Clayton wants to impart that sense of community he and Mickey felt as kids on Quindaro to today's youth.
When we grew up, yeah, we knew this is our hood. This is where we're from. This is who we are. A lot of these kids don't have that same thing.
Sense of community.
Our kids need to see the value in their community. They need to know, you know what? So what? You live on Quindaro? Quindaro is great.
Mickey, or little Mickey Glenn, back in the day, she says, spent almost all of her time at her grandma's house, just across from the old Safeway grocery store at 21st and Quindaro. That house was like their version of The Hangout. Neighborhood kids would play ball in the front yard and eat meals together. Kids like Maurice Green, the 4-time Olympic medalist and 5-time world champion in sprinting. He went to F.L. Schlegel High School, and their grandmas were neighbors.
It's funny to me because we used to jump rope, and he was younger than us. And so we might have bossed him around just a little bit. But, you know, we'd play. Kids knew how to have fun because it was okay to be a kid.
That's the whole thing. We all were trying to figure out how to bring Quindaro back.
That starts, he says, with the youth.
We have to pour something into them so that when they grow up, they have something to pour back into other people. If you don't pour nothing into them now, why would they come back?
What's up, kid?
For now, the gathering place for most everyone around here is Wilson's Pizza.
I took 2 exams today.
The building the Wells are eyeing for the hangout is right next door. Jamon Glass and I meet Kalia London there, and we all ordered her favorite meal.
Okay, so you get the pizzas, and you put them in a pan, then you put sauce, cheese, and pepperoni.
After some of us finish our pizza fries, I walk Jamon home. He shows me a shortcut behind that storefront he said gets shot up a lot. There are no sidewalks on Miss Beverly Street, so we walk on the road. He occasionally looks behind us, notices a big dog he says better be on a leash, then warns me that a car is coming. He tells me stories about the houses, says this one got shot up once, and that those neighbors over there, they gave that family a bunny from their litter, I think as some sort of consolation. When we get back, Miss Beverly asks me if these stories about Quindaro, if they'll help change things around here. I tell her the truth. I don't know. But I also tell her what I do know, what I've heard from 14-year-old Linnea Mead and from her own grandson, from Mickey and Clayton Wells, and from Mr. Wilson, who owns the pizza shop. They say things are changing, that maybe you can't see it yet, but if you spend any time around here, you can feel it.
That was KCUR's Andrea Tudhoe. This special Here to Listen edition of Central Standard was produced by our community engagement team here at KCUR. That's Laura Ziegler and Ron Jones, along with Noah Taborda, Andrea Tudhoe, and me, Michelle Tyrene Johnson. Our editor was Sylvia Maria Gross. We also had help on this project from Mike Russo, as well as Grace Lotz and Ann Selly, who produced an amazing series of photographs and stories to accompany this series on KCUR's Instagram account. Find more photos and stories about Quindaro Boulevard on our website, kcur.org, and later today, the entire audio of today's show will be available at kcur.org/centralstandard. Thanks for listening.